Hello, I'm Paul Witwicky, and this is number 0427, the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, and it comes to you right now.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Now, it's time for an eclectic mix of interviews and some of the oddest news stories you'll ever hear. It's the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
Hey there, hi there, ho there! Peter Anthony Holder here with you, and yes, this is indeed another edition of the Stuff File program, number 0427. And coming up on this edition of the Stuff File program, you'll meet James Hoagland, who is one of the minds behind the innovative new product, Epic Wipes.
It's a towel size shower alternative. It's all natural, it's biodegradable, and we spent a lot of time and resource sort of reinventing how these kinds of products are made, not only in the size, but in the content, so that it wouldn't be part of kind of a massive environmental problem around plastic fibers in our waterways.
Duke Eatman is the author of Chuck D Presents This Day in Rap and Hip Hop History. How did he get to know Chuck D?
Over the years, I've done specials on Public Enemy all over the place. And Chuck, I got in contact with myself and my partner, Ron Maskell, and he said, we should chronicle all this. You know my material and my legacy better than I do. So we began working on a few different projects here and there, and then he launched a radio show in New York City on WBAI. The show was called And You Don't Stop, and Chuck said, I have an idea. He says, we're going to do the world's first hip-hop almanac, and you're going to research hip-hop facts for each day of the week, and we'll do like a weekly summary.
Gary Katona is also known as the Voice Builder. He trains people's voices. How did he become the Voice Builder?
By failing, literally failing with one voice coach after the other, not realizing that what I was being taught was useless. When I finally made that realization, I began doing it on my own, did my own research, and discovered the reality of vocal muscles. And being an athlete, I understood that when you have muscles, the best way to improve them is to exercise them. So I came up with a series of exercises that literally build the voice, in contradiction to what everybody else does.
And there's lots and lots of Stuff File news, and of course, an idiot of the day. The guests later. The person who told you this was show number 0427 was Paul Witwicky, an amateur photographer and Star Trek aficionado. We also worked together in TV many, 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 many years ago. Thank you very much, Paul, for doing the guest slate on this edition of the Stuff File program, a program that is a listener-supported, fan-funded radio show that depends on you for our success. Join us at patreon.com to help make this show an even bigger and better radio experience. Well, let's get right to the stuff, shall we? The Russian division of Burger King has asked the country's federal anti-monopoly service to ban Stephen King's horror movie It from being shown in Russian theaters because the clown character Pennywise looks too much like Ronald McDonald, and therefore the movie is advertising for McDonald's. However, The Hollywood Reporter noted that the movie opened in Russia on September the 7th and had already grossed millions of dollars by late September. A spokeswoman for the FAS, confirming that the complaint had been received, said, "We can't be concerned with the content of the film, but the agency would determine whether it contained advertising or product placement." Okay. This story is so bizarre on so many levels, and frankly, it makes no sense. I mean, if anyone has seen the movie, and trust me, I'm not one of them because I know what it's about, you would think that Burger King would be happy and it would be McDonald's who's pissed. Anyone who watches the movie will not be turning their back on Ronald McDonald ever again. And by the way, speaking of creepy mascots, that large head with the painted smiling face of the Burger King monarch is truly the stuff of nightmares. So Burger King, look in your own backyard for issues, okay? Because you've got plenty. Okay, Samantha, the intelligent sex doll, suffered a number of indignities at the Ars Electronica Festival in Linz, Austria, in early September. Now, Sergei Santos of Barcelona, Spain, who developed Samantha, said men at the show acted like barbarians. Two fingers were broken. She was heavily soiled. Samantha, who talks, is also programmed to react when someone touches her. Santos told Metro News that Samantha would have to undergo repairs and cleaning, but she can endure a lot. She will pull through. Okay, Sergey. Shouldn't this be a sign to you that perhaps this isn't a good idea? I mean, they broke two fingers and she has to undergo repairs. This is not the kind of practice, and I'm doing air quotes, that someone needs if they're ever going to have any hope of engaging with a living, breathing woman. This is the kind of activity that leads to a guest starring role on Criminal Minds. For the love of God, stop now. Yeah. Okay. Doctors thought a 47-year-old postman in Preston, Lancashire, England, who complained of a persistent cough, might have had cancer, as he was a long-term smoker whose x-ray showed a spot on his lung. But when they removed the mask, the BBC reported they found a long-lost Playmobil traffic cone the patient had received as a gift on his 7th birthday. He told doctors he had regularly swallowed the small pieces as a child and believed that he had inhaled the tiny cone. Happy ending. After the toy was removed, the man's cough almost disappeared, and his other symptoms improved. See, in some way, shape, or form, most of the toys we grew up with on any given day could have killed us. And yet, most of us are still here. I'm just saying. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our first guest here on this edition of the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, here's what happens when you allow people to vote. A Swedish transport company has given in to the will of the people by officially naming a new train, Trainee McTrainface, after a public vote. Transport company MTR Express, which earlier this year asked readers of Swedish newspaper Metro to vote on a name for the train, said 49% of the vote went to Trainee McTrainface, making it the top choice. Officials with MTR Express said they were resolved to abide by the public's decision, in part to avoid the sort of disappointment that resulted when a British polar research ship was not named Bodie McBoatface despite winning a public poll. Yes, and we wouldn't want to disappoint people, the little snowflakes, would we? Yeah. We saw pretty quickly that Trainee McTrainface was in the lead and the popular option. There was a bit of international attention on the vote, and I imagine that some people were quite delighted to get some revenge for the whole Bodie McBoatface thing, MTR Express marketing chief Per Nasvi said. Oh, I hope nobody ever has a contest to name a fertility clinic. Ooh. Anyway, let's get to our first guest here on this edition of the Stuff File program, shall we? Epic Wipes are massive individual wet wipes for on-the-go cleanliness when a shower isn't available. While they are huge, they come in a small package, a very small package, that can fit in the palm of your hands. One of the masterminds behind Epic Wipes is James Hoagland. He joins us on the line via Skype from Vermont. Hi, James.
Hey, Peter. How are you?
Just tickety-boo. Thanks very much for taking the time to be on the program with us. First of all, congratulations on not only the success of your product, but the fact that you showed up on Steve Harvey's Thunderdome and did very well there, too.
Well, thank you, Peter. And like I said before we started recording, just so pleased that you reached out. Your work goes way back. And I, as you know, grew up in the Montreal media sort of world vicariously through my father's career and have always admired your work. So I'm thrilled to be here. And yes, Steve Harvey, many people know him from his show with the kids and he has his daytime talk show. But this year he had this new program, Thunderdome. And we, as you said, have this epic wipe that my dear friend Aeneas Janzi invented, and it's a towel-size shower alternative. It's all natural. It's biodegradable, and we spent a lot of time and resource sort of reinventing how these kinds of products are made, not only in the size, but in the content, so that it wouldn't be part of kind of a massive environmental problem around plastic fibers in our waterways. We can get more into that, but because we spent so much time and resource on sort of making the product something we could be proud of and to put into the world, we didn't have a great marketing budget, so we had to be a little unconventional, and that's how we ended up on the Steve Harvey's Thunderdome seeking to win $50,000 to keep the business going and expand our efforts. So it was a pretty exciting thing to do, no doubt, but pretty crazy as well.
Now, as you said, it's made from 100% biodegradable bamboo. The idea, I guess, was to be environmentally friendly first before the need to create a wet wipe or a giant epic wipe, I should say, came to the forefront, correct?
Well, that's it exactly. I mean, my friend, the inventor, Aeneas Janzi, he's a doctor still active in the United States military, and he was deployed in Afghanistan. And the seed idea was simply, you know, when they were having, as all soldiers who've been deployed abroad will understand, those wet wipe baths. You know, you use a whole package of those smaller things, and they, besides the ecological impact, don't necessarily, depending on the product, you know, really give you a shower fresh feel. And so we had the idea, why not a giant towel-sized wet wipe? But that started a 2.5-year process of getting into the development of something that was ecologically friendly. And those were just, we kind of started, you know, hashing it out together. What are our non-negotiables? If we're going to, I was a teacher and in the theater as well for my 20s and most of my 30s. And so I've always kind of worked in the nonprofit, mission-driven milieu. And, you know, non-negotiables at the start were that it had to be a product we could be proud of. It had to be something that wasn't part of the problem, but was part of the solution, not just for customers, but for the world. Sort of, how do you start from scratch and always keep corporate citizenship as your North Star? Even if it means you don't succeed, how do you not compromise those principles? So that's the experiment we've been working through.
One of the things I always find fascinating, as you just described, is the fact that this was not something that was created because somebody decided, you know, I want to start a business and make some money. It's clearly a case of necessity is the mother of invention.
Absolutely. And then walking back everything from there. You know, when we approached the Steve Harvey show, Thunderdome, last year, we had a great product. We'd had success on a Kickstarter campaign, but it was really an idea made real. And the intervening time has been the process of transitioning from a cool product that we'd produced to a sort of a company that we could be proud of. So one of the most exciting parts of my job is the philanthropic component. I get to spend a lot of time finding and building relationships with nonprofit partners out there that can serve as conduits to get our product to some people who can really, really benefit in where clean water is scarce. I mean, obviously, the first example that comes to mind are the hurricanes this year, particularly Puerto Rico. So we were able to distribute more than 1,000 wipes through Save the Children and through a network of FEMA volunteers that are right on the ground. And, you know, the reason we're able to do that is because from day one, for every for every box of Epic Wipes we sell, which is a 10-pack, we donate one Epic Wipe to someone who needs it. So we've developed this great budget of donation sort of currency and wipes. And the fun part of my job is finding the most effective ways to get those quickly deployed, you know, to people who can really use them in disaster scenarios. So that's been kind of a benchmark for me, because as awful as these hurricanes are, it was we were sort of right at the right time where we built up this budget and could get some of those wipes out into the field. So I'm really excited about, over time, you know, over the years ahead, as fresh water becomes more scarce in the developing world, and unfortunately, as we see more and more of these needs for hygienic solutions, that our product can be deployed but not be a pollution hazard in the process. It'll just biodegrade when we're done. So yeah, you're right. It's a mission-driven culture, and we didn't really You know, it'd be disingenuous to say, of course, we want to make a living. Of course, we want to do well with this for-profit endeavor, but we wanted to build it around kind of the way we were brought up here in Vermont and the things that, again, were just non-negotiable for the both of us.
Well, on that note, how has being on the Steve Harvey Thunderdome changed things for you? What was life like business-wise before that appearance on the show, or at least before it aired, and
well,
after?
We did see a nice spike in sales that, you know, but the reality is, to maintain anything like that, it's elbow grease. We knew going in, you know, it was 15 minutes in the spotlight, which we greatly appreciated, and fun is right in the name, so we had a lot of fun doing it. You can actually find on our Facebook page, the Epic Wipes Facebook page, the episode from Thunderdome. But we just had a lot of fun with it. But more importantly than those 15 minutes of fame, I think, are kind of, as I said, on a shoestring marketing budget, how it led me to get a chance to talk to, you know, Peter Anthony Holder and to Mitsumi Takahashi about what we're doing. You know, it sort of gives you that credibility. And, you know, I'm still working from my home in Vermont, just like I was before Thunderdome. However, everyone now thinks I'm a wildly successful businessman. So, you know, it lends that credibility to the endeavor. But most importantly, we were just glad to share the story of the product. And like you said, necessity being the mother of invention, it came from a problem. My friend, who going back 30 years, who's a scientist, a doctor, and has made a career out of providing solutions in pain management for returning veterans at Walter Reed and abroad. You know, so it was kind of just his natural thing. Here's a problem. Here's a scientific solution. It's good for the environment. It's good for people. And the use cases are just, you know, we could go on another 10 minutes with that. But I'm just really thrilled to be a part of it. You know, and to make that transition from teaching to the business world and still be able to feel that sense of purpose, that sense of mission, is what makes it plausible for me to be involved in something like this. So it's been a trip.
and let's not forget that for all the altruistic things you're doing and the need that it offers to people who are definitely in need. From a local point of view, from just an everyday use point of view, it has practical implications from people who go to gyms, go camping, various reasons why you would want something like this and in your daily living, those who cycle to work, for instance.
Right.
Who still want to
be those like me who always imagined they would cycle to work, but then the gross factor and the sweat factor was just made it a non-option. It's kind of like all this kind of modern lifestyle of moving from activity to activity, having a utility like this along the way. And again, you know, it boils down to trying it, which is why it's so great to talk to folks like you, Peter, and to do the Thunderdome, is because, you know, once people try this sort of naturally antibacterial with the content of eucalyptus, it's kind of like a spa experience in your pocket, and also, you know, can go a long way to sort of make, you know, that cycle to work possible, or after your 10-hour flight. I mean, goes on and on. I wipe the dog down. I clean my car. It's something people just have to try, and you know, they can do that at Amazon or on epicwipes.com in Canada. I just wanted to offer your audience also through the rest of October, if they just type in code Peter, they'll get an additional 20% off at epicwipes.com, because I want folks to try it and see what we're all about. So hopefully that'll be useful to some of your audience members.
Excellent. And we should also mention, because you alluded to it earlier, your dad. For those in our audience who are beyond Montreal and don't know who your dad was and is, Bill Hoagland, who is a legendary news anchor here in Montreal. So many of us grew up watching him, and you literally grew up with him.
So, yes, which is a whole different ballgame than growing up watching it. You know, we grew up here in Vermont, and as I said to you when we got on, Peter, you know, some of my dad's fondest memories of interviews were with you, because you have such a natural rhythm, and it's just so conversational. And, you know, there's very few things that my dad did in his career that I got a kick out of, because at home, of course, he was just just dad, and we were taught celebrity, you know, is meaningless without substance. And I think that's something I know you really appreciate. Your book is a you know, great example of that. And but one of the only things I got a kick out of it in relation to your book and your fascination with the true sort of stars among us was when my dad interviewed John Lennon and Yoko Ono during the Love-In. Now, I wasn't around yet, but that's one of the few pieces of footage that if I have to pull something out to show friends what my dad did for a living, that is definitely the coolest. So,
and we should mention very quickly, just got less than a minute, that your dad is retired, but by no means quiet. He has become a novelist.
He has, yes. His fifth book will be coming out, I think, in the spring. He did a three-part series around a reporter in Montreal. It was fiction, but it was sort of steeped in his experience. He has a book of short stories that was really one of the things I'm most proud of, called After the Rain, and was nominated for some Canadian awards in the short fiction area. And his newest one goes back to the way he brought me up around a campfire. He's got a great sort of horror, kind of apocalyptic, highly imaginative novel coming out called Portals. And you can look for that in Vehicule Press's out of Montreal. Simon Dardick is the publisher. That'll be coming along, I believe, in the spring. So
we'll have to get your dad on the program to talk about his book when it does come out.
Oh, I know he'd love that, Peter.
In the meantime, we got to mention again, people can go to the website epicwipes.com and find out more information about your amazing product. I thank you very, very much, James, for taking the time to be on the program with us.
Well, thank you, Peter, and I look forward to seeing you soon, I hope. Take care now.
James Hoagland from Epic Wipes. This really is a product that is revolutionary, both on a product use level for consumers and also what it can do to help others in need. For more information, you can go to their website at epicwipes.com. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, check out the show number for this program, which is show number 0427, and you'll find the link. And yes, we also have to get his legendary dad, Bill Hoagland, back on the show to talk about his new book. He was the coolest news anchor on the planet. We'll set that up later. You're listening to The Stuff File Program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
The Stuff File Program is a listener-supported, fan-funded radio show that depends on you for our success. Join us at patreon.com to help make this show an even bigger and better radio experience. Sign up and find out about our rewards program. Being a patron doesn't have to be a long-term commitment. There's absolutely no obligation. You could join today and end whenever you'd like. But the time we have your support would be so greatly appreciated. We'd also love to hear your thoughts about the show and even your ideas for rewards. Join us for the ride. Join us at patreon.com/thestufffileprogram. You're listening to The Stuff File Program with Peter Anthony Holder. The best thing since sliced bread. No loafing here.
And still to come on the program, we'll talk to Duke Eatman, author of Chuck D Presents This Day in Rap and Hip-Hop History. Plus, we'll meet Gary Katona, the voice builder. And we also have an idiot of the day coming your way a little later on, and much more Stuff File news here on a program that is listener-supported, fan-funded radio that depends on you for our success. Join us at patreon.com to help make this show an even bigger and better radio experience. Okay. For the record, I have to state that I'm glad this guy in this next story is caught, but you have to give him points for style and ingenuity. I mean, really. It was a mystery that had police puzzled for a while, a rash of thefts reported by passengers who had taken the 75-minute bus trip between Paris and Beauvais Airport. The driver has been credited with helping crack the case after he spotted a suspicious suitcase being loaded onto his bus as he prepared to drive from Paris to the airport. Acting on his tip-off about a large brown bag that appeared to be moving on its own, police in Beauvais pounced on a Romanian man who picked up the suitcase and a smaller black backpack as he arrived. After arresting him, detectives found an accomplice hidden inside the case who, once alone in the baggage hold during the trip, would pull a strap to unzip himself and then begin his thieving. Both men, aged around 40, were from Romania and had criminal records for theft. This is the kind of stuff that movies are made of where you're actually rooting for the criminals. Again, kids, don't try this at home. A Mesa County, Colorado sheriff's deputy was on patrol, and even while driving could smell the familiar odor of fresh marijuana coming from a rental truck he was following in the town of Fruitvale. The truck was speeding, so he pulled it over and asked the driver, 53-year-old Sin Chan Huang, if he had any marijuana in the truck. "Just a little," the man said. Huang agreed to show the deputy what a little was. He pulled up the rolling door, pulled out a trash bag, poked a finger through the plastic, and pulled out some weed. "It's just a little bit," Huang told the deputy. "I can throw it out." But the deputy could see other trash bags in all. There were 87 bags holding 3,100 pounds of marijuana. Huang and his passenger, 49-year-old Larry Tran, were arrested and charged with felony possession with intent to distribute marijuana. Will they go to prison? Yeah, for a little bit. And during that time, they'll hopefully understand the proper use of the term proportions. Okay, a Panama City, Florida hotel guest answered a knock at the door. A man with a gun forced his way into the room and threatened to shoot him if he tried to run away. They remained in the room for what the resulting police report called an extended period of time until the intruder fell asleep and the man escaped. The intruder then wandered down to the front desk. While arguing with the on-duty desk clerks, the man pulled out the gun he used earlier, pointed it at the clerks, and pulled the trigger several times while yelling, "Bang!" The gun didn't go off. Police arrested 36-year-old Jerry Mills Jr., who was charged with four counts of aggravated assault with a firearm, burglary of an occupied dwelling with a firearm, false imprisonment, carrying a concealed firearm, possession of a firearm by a convicted felon. Oh yes, they're always convicted felons. And improper exhibition of a firearm. Lots of firearm charges there. Yeah, anyway. He should probably take a nap before his trial. And that's a word of advice to would-be criminals. Get a good night's sleep before your caper. Yeah. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our next guest here on this edition of the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, 64-year-old Congressman Tim Murphy, a Republican serving Pennsylvania's 18th congressional district for the past 14 years, is a Roman Catholic with a strong pro-life record. Murphy, a PhD psychologist before his congressional career, revealed an extramarital affair with a woman half his age, also a psychologist. Maybe they should be in therapy. Before the local newspaper could actually spill the beans on this story. The Pittsburgh Post-Gazette got hold of the court papers when the mistress's husband sued her for divorce. Part of the evidence, text messages between Murphy and the woman where Murphy suggested she should have an abortion when she thought she was pregnant. You have zero issue posting your pro-life stance all over the place when you have no issue asking me to abort our unborn child just last week, she texted to him. Murphy's response? He didn't write such positions. Staff does them. Murphy has resigned, and it turned out his mistress was not pregnant after all. Gee, did he write his own letter of resignation, or was that the duty of his staff? And by the way, when I say staff, I mean the people who work for him, just to be clear. Anyway, let's get to our next guest here on this edition of the Stuff File program, shall we? There is a new book out called Chuck D Presents This Day in Rap and Hip-Hop History. Chuck D's name is on the cover, but a lot of the heavy lifting in the research and writing of the book fell to Duke Eatman, a broadcaster and music historian who has an encyclopedic musical mind. Duke joins us on the line right now from right here in Montreal to talk about the book. Hi, Duke.
Good afternoon, Peter. How are you, sir?
Just tickety-boo. Thanks very much for being on the program, sir.
It's always a pleasure and an honor.
So I've had the opportunity, as a matter of fact, I saw the book recently. It's a nice coffee table size book filled with information and detail. How long, first of all, how did you get involved with this in the first place in dealing with Chuck D?
I began working with Chuck D around 1999. And it all started with a bunch of radio documentaries I would do on their music, these 4 or 5 hour radio documentaries. This is back when I was at a community radio station in Chateauguay, CHAI 101.9 FM. And over the years, I've done specials on Public Enemy all over the place. And Chuck, I got in contact with myself and my partner, Ron Maskell, my project partner, and he said, we should chronicle all this. You know my material and our legacy better than I do. So we began working on a few different projects here and there, and then he launched a radio show in New York City on WBAI, which is part of the Pacifica Network. Now, the Pacifica Network was somewhat of a counterculture radio network in the 1960s, and was a station where people like Harry Belafonte and Bob Dylan used to just like to come by and hang out, because it was a very revolutionary, kind of a hipster-type place to be, politically, socially, and whatnot. And the show was called And You Don't Stop. And Chuck said, I have an idea. He says, we're going to do the world's first hip-hop almanac, and you're going to research hip-hop facts for each day of the week, and we'll do like a weekly summary of it. And at the same time, he was able to simulcast that on his own website called rapstation.com, so you can get the daily edition on rapstation.com, but you would hear our weekly edition on WBAI 99.5 FM. Now, originally, I would just write and research everything from LL Cool J's birthday and what his name was at birth, where he was born, bios, album release dates, first hip-hop artist to appear on Sesame Street, the first hip-hop performance on the Grammy Awards, American Music Awards, whatnot. And Chuck would voice them. I would write them and voice them. And after about a year of that, he said, okay, you're going to voice them. This is too much. So what happened was we would voice them, and maybe about the second year into that project on WBI, I said we should make a book out of this. And so basically it was a five-year program. And the reason why it was 5 years instead of four is that midway through, he thought the idea to do it for Public Enemy would be interesting, because we were coming up to when they were going to be inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. This was 2013. So I lost close to a year doing the same sort of book just based on Public Enemy. And then we got back to the project. And although I'm really glad there's a great reception. I just found out yesterday it's a bestseller, and the reception has been really great. This morning I just got a call that Spike Lee's a big fan of the book. I would never in my entire life ever embark on writing a book ever again.
Why did you say
that?
It was
5 years of not knowing. I'm going to sleep with these facts. I wake up thinking about the hospital that Method Man of the Wu-Tang Clan was born in. And you know, when you research something, and don't forget, right, it wasn't just a book project. This was on radio every single week, and on the rapstation.com website every week. So it's not like I could take some time off or go to Martha's Vineyard and write. This had to be done every single day. So this literally was 5 years every single day of writing this book.
We work in broadcasting, and in broadcasting, what we do, quite frankly, is a disposable, tangible product. It goes out on the air or on the screen or wherever medium you're in, and it's listened to and done with, and then you're on to the next thing. It's a never-ending revolving door, as you know. When you're writing a book, you don't really think about the fact that it becomes a tangible thing. What was it like for you when you first got that book in your hands that you were such a part of?
Well, we wrapped up less than a year ago. And so, you know, went to print, and we had some incredible artists who did illustrations of all the artists that we talked about. So we wrapped up. But the problem is there's been vital things that have happened since then. So it becomes, you know, there's certain deaths that we didn't get a chance to report, because eventually you got to go to the assembly line and print this book. So it was nice to have it in my hands, but it's like, wait a minute, there's some stuff that happened, and I got to get it in there. Eminem's freestyle on Donald Trump, too late. No matter what's going on, it's too late. So one of the things that Chuck D, of course, assured me of is, you know, volume 2, volume 3, volume 4. But I'll tell you something, even going beyond updating, right, I've written for at least 3 or 4 of these books, the size of 3 or 4. Don't forget, for space constraints, we actually took all the birthdays and bios out. Otherwise, the book would have been literally twice as big. Volume 2 could simply be, and you know what Chef Raekwon of the Wu-Tang Clan's name was at birth. You'll know that the T in Ice-T is actually Tracy. He was born Tracy Merrill. A lot of these artists, Tupac Shakur was not his name at birth, and he was not born where you thought he was born. So we had to just remove that just for space constraints, just to get all these other significant things like the assassination of Tupac and Biggie, Grammy Awards, Kendrick Lamar, Kanye West, all these incredible things that happened. So even at that, to continue, there's still enough material for where we're at, and then later on, updated versions. Because, I mean, unfortunately, think about it, some of these incredible artists at some point are going to pass away. And if we want to keep this sort of as like a blueprint or something you put in a time capsule, it's going to have to be updated. But at a certain point, we have to just cut and say, okay, we're going to go from here.
In having the book out now, who is, in your estimation, your biggest audience? Those who are the massive hip-hop and rap fans, or those who want to learn about it? In other words, is there a broader audience besides just the fan base?
Well, the ironic thing about it is that, you know, people like LL Cool J, Nas, Kendrick Lamar, Ice-T, who all got early editions of the book, were big fans, and they actually wrote, you know, some liner notes for us and whatnot and comments on it. So there's those in the industry. And by the way, LL Cool J's comment that this book was like living his life again was probably the biggest compliment I got, because that's what I wanted it to be. I wanted to go through the history of hip-hop again right from scratch. But then there's the young hip-hop heads who really didn't realize that rap music and hip-hop culture was that old. They're jumping on it. And I'm running into a lot of parents that are just excited to buy this for their kids for Christmas. I got tons of text messages, and I saw the book, or I heard about it on the radio or on television. I'm going to buy it for so-and-so for Christmas. He's going to love it. He's a big hip-hop fan. And he said it looks interesting for me to read as well. So it actually is a mix. That kind of surprised me, because I really thought it would only be hardcore hip-hop heads that'd be into it.
Now, I've known you for a while. I know you have amazing street cred. But what has this book done for that street cred? I mean, you rattle off names of hip-hop stars that you've come into contact with and who know who you are and who know what you have done. How has this improved, if any, your street cred?
I don't know if it's improved my street cred, but I think most people now actually know that I can meet a deadline when they find out that this was a 5-year project. I think that shocks people. You hung in there for that long? It's like, wow. And I mean, don't forget, a lot of the information came from artists like DMC, of Run DMC, so many different hip-hop artists that I actually interviewed for the book, Wise Intelligent of Poor Righteous Teachers. But then I also drew information from hip-hop artists whose interviews I still had on tape. Remember tape? from before this project was even started. So I don't know much about the street cred, because my involvement in hip-hop culture is as old as dirt, but I think more than anything, people are more shocked that this project took as long as it did, and I somehow survived, and I still got most of my ears. So.
Well, for hip-hop fans, it certainly is worth the wait. The book is called Chuck D Presents This Day in Rap and Hip-Hop History. Duke Eatman is the man who put this all together. Duke, I thank you very, very much for taking the time to be on the program with us.
Peter, thank you. Love your show to death. I've always been a fan of yours. You've not only been a great colleague of mine, but a mentor as well. I enjoy all the stuff you do, and it's so cool to finally be on the Stuff File for the first time.
Duke Eatman, the man behind the new book, Chuck D Presents This Day in Rap and Hip-Hop History. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, check out the show number for this program, which is show number 0427, and you'll find links to either Amazon.com or Amazon.ca, where you can order the book directly. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
I'm Bob DiRico Jones, and this is Let's Be Fair. After we announced the finalists in our Wacky Warning Labels contest, we got calls from all over the world. Reporters in Germany, France, Korea, and Japan who want to feature the contest. They all ask the same thing. Why are there so many common sense warnings on products sold in America? The answer is that anyone who sells a product here knows they can be sued over almost anything, so these warnings are meant to prevent frivolous lawsuits. Like when a guy who was playing basketball caught his teeth in the net while dunking the ball and sued the net makers. He got $50,000. In another case, a tool maker was sued by a man who used one of their wood routers to try to fix his own teeth. That company eventually put a label on the tool warning that it's not intended to be used as a dental drill. Now, let's be fair. These warnings can be hilarious. But the fact that product makers have to put them there because they're facing so many abusive lawsuits is nothing to laugh about. Learn more. Visit our website at centerforamerica.org.
This is the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. This broadcast is coming to you from upstairs. Get out of the house.
And still to come on the program, we'll talk to a voice trainer. Plus, we do indeed have an idiot of the day coming your way. And I've still got a few Stuff File news stories to share with you here on a program that is also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. Just want to remind you, just in time for the holiday season, boys and girls, you know, my book, Great Conversations, My Interviews with Two Men on the Moon and a Galaxy of Stars, is available, and it would make a lovely gift. You have a chance to share with others the interviews that I did with Oscar winners like Carl Malden, Cloris Leachman, and Christopher Plummer, Emmy winners like Ed Asner, Michael Moriarty, and Lindsay Wagner, Tony winners like Carol Channing and Julie Newmar, a host of TV icons like Buddy Ebsen, Bob Denver, Dick Van Patten, Gary Coleman, and also two guys who actually went to the moon. So, get the book now. It's available out there. Great Conversations, My Interviews with Two Men on the Moon and a Galaxy of Stars. You can find it on Amazon.com or Amazon.ca or at the publisher's website, BearManorMedia.com. What are you waiting for? Well, authorities say a life-size cutout of Pope Francis that was stolen from a New Jersey church during a bingo fundraiser has been returned intact. New Jersey police say the theft occurred sometime Thursday night at St. Charles Borromeo Catholic Church in Gloucester County. A post made on the department's Facebook page that following night says the cutout had been returned, but further details have not been disclosed. It's not clear who may have taken the cutout or what prompted the theft. One witness had reported seeing the cutout in a car occupied by three women, including an elderly person who was on oxygen. Now, what I'd like to know is, if you're a religious person and you steal a cutout of Pope Francis, where can you put that thing where it's not constantly staring at you? I'm guessing that was the divine realization that these thieves probably came to. The Lord works in mysterious ways. Yes. And police say a New Jersey man tried to get a little too comfortable in a massage chair at a mall. Police in Lawrence Township say that 51-year-old Joseph Michalski took off his clothes completely in a massage chair at the Quaker Bridge Mall. Authorities say when a mall security guard asked the Hamilton resident to put his clothes back on, Michalski punched him in the face. Police said the guard then wrestled the man to the ground before police arrived. Michalski was charged with lewdness and simple assault. The guard was not seriously hurt. Special kudos, by the way, to the guard, because, you know, no one wants to wrestle an oiled-up naked man in a mall. And by the way, you just know in today's social media world that there's got to be at least one picture, if not a video, of that struggle. The hunt is on. Anyway, let's get to our final guest in this edition of the Stuff File program, shall we? Gary Katona describes himself as a voice builder. His clients have included the likes of Whitney Houston, Robin Thicke, Steven Tyler, Stevie Wonder, Katy Perry, Andrea Bocelli, Muhammad Ali, and a host of others. He has been Hollywood's go-to voice coach and fixer in vocal rehabilitation. He has just launched a DVD system to teach people all over the world. Gary joins us on the line right now from California. Hi, Gary.
Greetings.
Thanks for being on the program with us. One of the things I guess a lot of people don't really understand about voice is that it's like any other muscle in the body. It has to be used, it has to be exercised, it has to be strengthened, correct?
Yeah, that's the basic misconception. We're under the misunderstanding that that the voice that you have is the voice that you're born with. And in fact, the voice is controlled by muscles. And by building your vocal muscle, you can literally rebuild your voice.
Now, how did you get into this in the first place? I know you started out as a singer, but how did you get into the idea of becoming a so-called voice builder?
By failing, literally failing with one voice coach after the other, not realizing that what I was being taught was useless. When I finally made that realization, I began doing it on my own, did my own research, and discovered the reality of vocal muscles and being an athlete. And I understood that when you have muscles, the best way to improve them is to exercise them. So I came up with a series of exercises that literally build the voice in contradiction to what everybody else does.
Now, even though people who work with their voices, like I work with my voice, even though people who work with their voices should know that, there is a difference between the different types of voices people have. Like, for instance, as a broadcaster, my voice is different than a singer, which is different than a stage actor, which is different than just a simple orator, correct?
Yeah, I think of different kinds of athletes. You have football players, you have tennis players, you have soccer players. You know, it's they're all using muscles, just they're using them in a different capacity at a higher level of use.
So what exactly, and I mentioned a list of people that you have trained, what exactly do you do for, let's pick somebody off the list, Stevie Wonder. What would you do for a Stevie Wonder as opposed to what you would do for a Muhammad Ali? Because they're two different people, and I would assume two different reasons for how and why they use their voices.
Well, for example, with Muhammad Ali, it was for his speaking voice. In other words, it was to make his speaking voice louder, more resonant, more functional. For Stevie Wonder, it's more, you're concerned more with, not more, but in addition to that, you're concerned with increasing the person's vocal range, for example. Whereas when you're building somebody's speaking voice, the building a high range is not really necessary. So it's all based upon what the person's vocal needs might be.
Now, what happens, or what is the situation with a person whose vocal range, which I'm sure changes, what happens as we age?
Well, as we age, like any other muscle group, our muscles stiffen and they become less flexible. Now, if you're a singer and if you've misused your voice for many years, the vocal cords can actually get thicker, which reduces range and creates rasp and so on. So you have a number of really great singers that have had very short careers because of misusing their voices in this manner. Whereas they understood the reality of vocal muscles, which most of them don't, and learn how to exercise their muscles, they retain what they had in their youth all their lives.
I'll bring up one person as an example. Tom Jones always has been known for his vibrato, and the thing I find fascinating about him is in his current advanced age, he doesn't sound any different than he did 30, 40 years ago. And usually you hear a little bit of deterioration in a voice in somebody as they age, particularly a singer, and we don't with him.
Well, you know, Tom went through a phase where he had vocal problems. I believe he had vocal nodules at a certain point. He's a very athletic singer. Like a Whitney Houston, they use their voices extremely athletically as compared to a James Taylor, for example, who's more of a crooner than an outright vocal athlete. So in Tom's case, he has a very strong voice, and you can never underestimate the factor of natural endowment. People are naturally endowed with stronger vocal muscles in certain respects. In some cases, you have the opposite is true.
Now you just mentioned something. You compared a James Taylor to a Tom Jones, and their different styles. So when you're training somebody, when you're working with someone, particularly a singer, do you take into consideration the type of singing they do, or the type of singing they want to do?
Absolutely. For example, if you're training an operatic voice, there are different kinds of registers that are appropriate for singing that kind of music. You have to build in to the proper vocal exercises. Whereas if you're singing rock and roll or pop, it's not the same thing. As an example, when you sing a high note as a pop singer, the larynx naturally rises, which can be very dangerous, but it's a part of the art form, so you have to deal with it. Whereas if I was training an opera singer, the raising of the larynx would not be required, because you make certain physical adjustments that don't make raising the larynx necessary when you sing high notes. So it's all based upon the style of music that we're talking about.
Now, as I mentioned in the introduction, you have just launched a DVD system to teach people all over the world to sing. Tell us about that, what it will do, and how people can get it.
Well, I look at the analogy of somebody who's somebody who might be a really great chef who writes a cookbook. If you buy the cookbook, you'll get an approximation of what the person would teach if you were there live with you. It's not exactly the same thing. It's not as good, but it's very good. And I see the DVD in that same respect. By using the DVD, your voice would build, for whatever reason, whether it's for your speaking voice or your singing voice, it doesn't matter what style of singing you're concerned with. And, my website is GaryKatona.com, and that's a good place to find it.
Now, as looking again over your bio, you grew up wanting to be a singer, and that brings another question to point, and that is, when it comes to vocal coaches, can there be a problem if you do too much too soon in what is essentially a developing body?
It depends on the nature of the exercises. With me, no. Because what I do is very consistent with the natural movement of the vocal muscles. But other voice, with vocal, I don't consider myself a voice coach. I consider myself a voice builder. What I do and what a vocal coach does are two different things.
Okay, so... let's use the example of particularly in a boy's voice, going through puberty. Is there anything you would do differently or concern yourself with because that particular boy's voice is changing anyway?
Absolutely.
Okay, so
when you go up the person's range, there's certain points in a person's range where there's a transition that needs to be made in order to go into high notes when you're building a person's voice. But with a young boy, that transition area is not in the same place as it is for an adult. So you have to make an adjustment in terms of the vocal exercises based upon the use of the student.
So, but you can't keep a range if a voice is naturally changing. A voice is going to change to whatever it's going to be, right?
Well, you can influence it dramatically.
Really?
Absolutely. In a positive sense, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I've had students that were 7 or 8 years old. Hmm. One of my students, her name is Golda Berkman, who's now 18. I've been teaching her for 10 years. She's now an amazing opera singer. She's in Rome right now studying. And she'll probably be a world-famous opera singer. She began with me when she was 8 years old.
Since you say you're a vocal builder, not a vocal coach, what you're saying, what you're advocating, are these things that people should do to initially train their voice, or are these exercises that they should do continually over the years?
Forever. Continually forever. When I teach Andrea Bocelli or I teach a brand new student, they both learn the same exercises.
So teaching forever. And one of the ways people can find that information is by going to your website, right?
That's correct.
And that website is ultimatevoicebuilder.com?
That's one of them. And then there's also my website, which is GaryKatona.com.
GaryKatona.com. That's CATONA, GaryKatona.com.
That's right.
Excellent. Gary, thank you very, very much for taking the time to be on the program with us. Most fascinating indeed.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you very much.
Gary Katona, the voice builder. For more information, you can go to his website at GaryKatona.com. And you can visit my website, TheStuffFile.com. Go to the show number for this program, which is show number 0427, and you'll find that link. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. Time now for The Idiot of the Day.
And now it's time for The Strange Things Adults Do. This Stuff File presents The Idiot of the Day.
How long is it gonna take y'all dumbasses to find me? James Turner posted that seemingly rhetorical question on the Vernon Parish, Louisiana Sheriff's Office Facebook page. He gave the agency a 1-star rating and posted an image with an arrow indicating where he lived, along with the address of his trailer. And he spelled trailer, T-R-A-I-L-O-R. Yes, a Rhodes Scholar in more ways than one. So the answer to his question would clearly have to be not long. He was easily arrested on his outstanding warrant for not paying child support. The sheriff's office even posted about it, thanking Turner for reminding them of his arrest warrant. Now, why, oh why, would you go out of your way to taunt the police on their Facebook page when they're looking for you and you also give them complete directions to where you can be found? One reason, and one reason only, you're an idiot!
Gee, I'm only a kid, but even I know you're an idiot.
And that's it for this edition of the Stuff File program number 0427. Hope you enjoyed it. The website is thestufffile.com, and once again, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H, where you'll find information and links on all of our guests by going to the weekly Stuff File page. Just look for the corresponding program number, and once again, that's 0427. Email me at peter@thestufffile.com. You can also find me on Facebook and Twitter as P.A. Holder, and don't forget to check us out on patreon.com, where you can become a patron of the program. Hope to see you back here for our next show on the air, online, or as a download. We're coming to you from everywhere, including CyberStationUSA.com, GDPR Revolution 99, KDXRadio.com, AirChecker, Canada's number one radio source, PCJ Radio International and its partner stations, TrueTalkRadio.com, downloaded on iTunes, streaming on Stitcher, and over the air on World FM in New Zealand, MediaCorp in Singapore, and WSTJ in St. Johnsbury, Vermont. That's it. See you next time. Bye-bye.
Been listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, a presentation of Flying Fish Communications. Before we go, we'd like to leave you with a helpful instructional message from the National Association of People Who Have Trouble Walking and Chewing Gum at the Same Time. Step, chew, step, chew, step, chew, step, step. Oh, I always screw it up.